You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yo, what's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Fistful of Callers. Myself, Howell, Reed, Connell, and Chase Smith, all in the house.
Guys?
If you're wondering why we're laughing, just general grappling shenanigans going on backstage before the show.
Sorry. It's a very professional start to this show.
Super pro.
It's good to be back.
It's good to be back. Reed, where have you been?
Oh, man, yeah, I'm a little exhausted for sure. But yeah, I just got back from New York, man. Always a crazy time. Always fun. I was just on Tuesday night. We got some late night food, you know, Tuesday night, and I'm walking back through the streets of New York. It's just like
catch any shows?
It's just the most surreal place. That's a different podcast. The show is there for a different podcast.
I love New York. It's the city that literally
it's such a crazy place.
Right?
It really is. It really is just such a crazy place. And on top of just kind of the trip, it was an amazing trip. Got to, you know, kind of officially kick things off for ADCC. You know, I'm feeling the ADCC fever like in full swing right now. So it was a fun trip, absolutely.
Man, I love New York. I really do. Yeah. I haven't been as much as I used to go. There's a period a couple of years ago that I was going there like five times a year or something. And it seems you're the guy who does that now, right?
Yeah, definitely lucky. I've been there quite a few times just with Kasai and with, you know, going out there for some content trips and stuff like that. It's just like there's so many good people, at, you know, all in one spot. It's a cool spot.
Four blocks.
Yeah, really.
You can walk, you know, 5 minutes to three elite gyms. It's crazy,
yeah,
right?
And then plus Vitor Shaolin's is there as well. And there's a whole bunch.
JT, yeah, a little
JT
bit further.
Not too far, yeah. You know. And then, of course, all the guys out in Jersey as well. And, just like that area is just like concentrated with so much incredible jiu-jitsu.
So let's break it down. Okay, so it's ADCC. It's coming up. It's about 2 months away approximately. Yeah. There's a lot of guys from New York who are competing on ADCC, right? There's an absolute ton of guys because most of the main gyms have got at least one. Actually, they've
like
all got,
two or
like,
three.
They've all got at least three guys in, I think. So who'd you go and see?
Man, I tried to see everybody. Didn't get to see everybody. Maybe we can get them back out there again before ADCC. But, you know, I went to Marcelo's and I went to Henzo's, kind of hit those two. Talked to Johnny Grippo, Mateus Deniz. I got an incredible, you guys don't even know what you're in for. I got an incredible interview with Marcelo Garcia, over 2 hours, going through his ADCC career and everything. Just a huge deep dive. Such a privilege to be able to talk to that dude.
Any surprising moments you want to share early? A little teaser.
Oh, man, there are just so many. It was such an epic interview. We chronicled everything, you know. But what really hit me was talking about his first experience at ADCC in 2003.
Yeah, I was about to say, when was that? That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Think about that. Marcelo.
20 years at ADCC. It started in 98. It's in 2019 now.
Wow,
it's over 20 years at ADCC. Pretty impressive.
Marcelo broke onto the scene back in 2003. And the crazy thing is that he hasn't fought in ADCC since 2011. Mm. And yet, he's one of those guys that you mention ADCC and he's one of the first people you think of, right? Just an absolute freaking legend. Four-time ADCC champion?
He's a four-time ADCC champion.
2003, 2005. No, wait, hang on.
Yep, yeah. 2003, 2005.
Oh, he lost 2009.
Yeah. So he won 3 years in a row, 3 ADCCs in a row. 2003, right. 2005, 2007. Got the silver in 2009. and then came back in 2011 for the gold. So four-time gold medal freaking winner, incredible. Two-time silver medal.
Yeah, insane.
If you guys remember, he won the he got the silver medal in 2009, but he also got the silver medal in the absolute division in 2007.
Marcelo.
His going performances are like monsters. What you show people when you're trying to demonstrate what jiu-jitsu is.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Look at this smaller guy take on these beasts like Rico Rodriguez and all that stuff. Like, insane.
No, so what's
at the gym last night, and I was just like, oh, I'm trying. Everybody's been there.
What's the vibe like right now in those gyms? Like, can you feel the ADCC energy?
Yep. It seems like things are just kicking off. Like I said, you know, two months away from ADCC. So things are just starting to to get cooking out there for all these big ADCC camps, it looks like. And things are the intensity at these places is ratcheting up. You know, it's always fun to go see these guys train, especially the no-gi, go hard.
But as you were telling me, Marcelo's is where they were training in the gi when you were there.
Yep, they, of course.
That's definitely a factor,
I
think.
They kind of train year-round. Gi, no-gi, doesn't matter. And
straight up 50-50 split, right?
Yeah, and that's really big, comes down to from Marcelo, I think, you know, where it's just like he just trains everything year-round. It's all jiu-jitsu to him, and yeah.
You know what I was surprised to hear? I did an interview for my Chasing Greatness series with Josh Hinger last night, and he said at Atos they'll be training in the gi pretty regularly all the way up until ADCC. And he views it as like active rest. You know, he says no gi is much more physically demanding and taxing, especially when they're training for ADCC.
Oh, yeah.
And so he'll look at a gi class as a way just to kind of like refresh himself a little bit and get a sweat in. So I thought that was cool because I hadn't really considered it as an option, really.
Well, there's a lot of people who train day to day in those gyms that aren't getting ready for ADCC, right?
That's
so
it, yeah.
I guess you can't make like the entire student membership all train no gi for like 3 months of the year just to get ready for one competition that comes around every 2 years, right? So, but yeah, go on, carry on. But what was it like at Marcelo's?
Oh, you know, but they did train no-gi while I was there as well, you know, so, yeah, I got a lot of cool stuff, you know.
They'll train both in the same day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, both in the same day, yeah. Mm. I think they did the 11 o'clock class gi and then the noon class no-gi. So, yeah, they really switch back and forth all the time.
I remember when I was at Marcelo's, it was like an hour class, but, man, they packed it in. It looked so grueling. I was really impressed.
Yeah, every minute, you know, because, like, they have so many classes at Marcelo's. It seems like they have class, like, every hour.
Yeah, there's no hanging around, right?
Yeah, they pack every minute with, you know, like the warm-up, you know, two, 3 minutes, and then straight to the technique, and then, you know, so like they you get your money's worth for that hour.
You know what I noticed as well about most of the gyms in New York, but especially Marcelo's, it's a very New York thing that people literally run into the gym like 2 minutes before the class, like just get changed, like the clothes are off and their rash guards on, they're straight on the mat. But then the moment that the class is over, there's no hanging around. There's no, like, sitting around chatting. And, you know, a few of the guys, like, obviously, like Gianni and a few of the pros and stuff, they'll be, like, getting in extra rounds and drilling techniques and stuff. But the general student base, they're, like, straight back out the door. They're, like, jump in the shower, quick rinse off, and out and going back to work or whatever it is. And I don't know, it just feels like so... It's man, those guys, they treat it really seriously. It's very businesslike, right?
It's very New York like.
Very New York, very New York, yeah. And that's not to say that they're businesslike as in they're not friendly and stuff. They absolutely are. But it's just a very different vibe when, you know, people show up kind of like 15, 20 minutes before a session or midway through the warm up, and then everybody's lying around on the mat chatting afterwards and stuff.
I think it says a lot that none of the gyms I've been to in New York have any chairs. Like, it's just mats.
Huh. Yeah.
There's no, you know, I mean, Marcelo's has that windowsill you can kind of sit on, I guess, but...
And then there's the one chair at Henzo's, but that's reserved.
For Rob.
Oh, yeah. Black Rob, he's the mayor of Henzo Gracie, he's always there.
It's the one chair at Henzo's.
It belongs to Rob.
Everyone's in and out. And it's cool for me, because I've only been to New York twice now, and once was kind of by accident, but... when I was walking around after training, I ran into Gary Tone at Starbucks, and I ran into Craig Jones. I was walking back from Central Park. Like, they're just milling about, waiting to go back to training. It's such a unique scene because there's millions of people in New York, but there I am bumping into a bunch of guys just in that little radius.
There's nothing like New York. If you've never been out to New York to train, it's a privilege. It's a cool spot because you can go for a week and train with, like, you know, all these different world champions, all these different ADCC champions.
So. Well, before we go in too much about, like, what we did on this or what you did on the last couple of days, roll it back. Can you remember the first time you went to visit New York to train jiu-jitsu or to get experience in jiu-jitsu?
For me, it was the first time We did Road to World. So I went earlier for ADCC. I was at Nogi Pans right after that, but I didn't see any gyms, so it doesn't really count. But
just
I went
to Road to World for the event.
Exactly. Yeah. But Reed and I went out for Road to Worlds in 2017, or was that 18? Might have been 18.
Couldn't tell you.
I think it was 18.
No, yeah, 2018.
2018, and we hit Unity and Essential, and
right, because you did the famous video that everybody remembers,
right, with the shower
scene in Unity.
I don't know. The gyms themselves felt very similar. You know, like it was packed with elite guys and tough training, but just walking outside and being in New York was just such a crazy feeling to me.
Yeah, you know, it is, definitely.
But that's what stood out, was like just you walk out and you're in this metropolis, this megalopolis, if you will, and there's so much to do, and yet all these people just choose to do jiu-jitsu. It's awesome.
Yeah. What was it like then, the jiu-jitsu? You said it was like the gym was the gym. Is it like a little oasis inside the crazy hubbub of the city?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes a certain kind of person to call the old Unity Gym an oasis, but it was, you know, it's just a little hole in the wall. You walk by like a restaurant, I remember those guys like pushing little like carts around with, I think, food on it or something.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong.
On like the first floor.
Yeah, on the first floor, you feel like you're going some weird back alley, but then you end up at this destination where there's just so much talent and just a lot of people dedicating full time. You know, I think there might be more of that in New York, or at least the gyms we go to. Maybe I'm just seeing that, but
take it seriously.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's a lot of emphasis put on it. It's their entire life for a lot of guys that are maybe just purple belts and in their 30s. Even this is what they're doing.
Pretty incredible. How about you? Do you remember the first time you went to New York for jiu-jitsu?
The first time I went, I can't really remember off the top of my head the very first time. I don't know. It must have been maybe in 2016, or I can't remember, because I went to New York for the trials, I think, or I went to Jersey. But I don't know. I can't remember. But one time I do remember, maybe kind of early, was when I went there for the Henzo Gracie camp before ADCC 2017, and that's maybe one of the first times I went to Henzo's.
Oh, that's right, because we shot the documentary as well, the Danaher Death Squad, film, which is on the site, and it's really cool.
Experience unto itself, you know.
We went down.
Crazy backstory, but I mean, we went down with those guys. Went to Jersey, and I spent the night at Gary Tonin's house, which we could do another podcast on that,
just on that.
you know, but then woke up with the guys, Gordon and Nikki and Gary, and woke up, you know, like 5 o'clock, 4:30, and drove into the city with them, you know, because they live so far away for some reason.
Well, they used to.
Yeah, they used to.
I think Nikki still does,
Nikki,
right?
Nikki and Gary still.
Yeah.
Out in Brunswick.
Gordon's in the city now. But so you've got a taste of what it was to do their commute or their daily routine.
Yeah, Ethan, you know, Oliver, all those guys. I'm pretty sure a lot of those guys still do this. Nick Rodriguez, like, he even lives further away now.
He's all the way down, like, South Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Training with Jay Regalbuto and all those dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, South Jersey BJJ.
That's right.
So that was a crazy experience, driving in the car.
What time were you up in the morning?
With Gordon. I think we got up at like 4:30.
Jeez.
I mean, and like we had driven back and like did open mat with Gary, and then I ended up like interviewing Gary after that for like an hour. So like we didn't get back to Gary's house until like 11 p.m. probably. And then
straight to bed to go up, do it again.
Straight to bed and then get up at 4:30 to take a shower and get on the road by 5.
So you did one day of that.
Yeah, I did one day of that, and I was like, I can't be an ADCC champion. I can't.
And those guys, they literally go into the city like 6-7 days a week, right?
Yeah, I really don't know how they do it for real. But, you know, I think a lot of people have stories like that of riding the bike to the gym or walking to the gym or, you know, having to make sacrifices.
Living in the gym, whatever.
Living in the gym. Yeah. You know, a lot of these guys are absolutely making the sacrifices to be champion. And, I learned I couldn't do it.
Wow. Man, that sounds crazy. And that was a great flow film, because 2017 ADCC turned out to be a pretty good one for the Danaher Death Squad, right?
You know,
obviously, Gordon going on to get the gold and silver at ADCC. So you visited Henzo's this time as well?
Yep, got to visit Henzo's as well, you know. And, man, the mats just keep growing over there. You know, I think they've really put themselves on the map, especially since ADCC. So you have a lot of people like Craig Jones and like Nick Rodriguez who are really seeking out the training there. And, you know, I think everybody's going there. A lot of people, you saw Roberto going there and Keenan visiting there.
I've got a question for you, actually, because, doesn't really matter whenever I went to Henzo's. The classes were always packed. Like, especially, yeah. like, John's classes were the ones that I would usually go and attend because, you know, the big names kind of train in that. But it didn't matter. The class was always, like, 60 people, whether it was 8 a.m. or whether it was 12 noon or whatever. But have you noticed any difference, like, over the last couple of years with the, you know, the increased kind of profile of the squad? Are there more people in general training in those classes? Or
I mean, you're right. I've always been to Henzo's and it's always been packed.
Right. Like, so that's always, not changed.
Yeah, so that hasn't changed. You know, like it was tough, you know, definitely to be there with a camera trying to move around and whatnot, you know, because there's a lot of people on the mats and they're going hard, especially, you know, there's so many guys training for ADCC. So mm-hmm. like those guys plus everybody else. But yeah, you know, I mean, you're not going to see it's hard to see a 7 a.m. class have like 60 to 80 people in it. You know, you're like, it's 7 a.m. What are all you people doing?
And they're all good. Yeah. They're all like monsters.
Yeah. That's another thing that I want to talk about. Because like we talk so much about the competitors and stuff like that, right? But like you go into these gyms and, you know, we've gotten to train at a bunch of them and stuff like that too. And not only are the competitors good, but it's like there's a whole bunch of dudes who just train there every day, who just train with Gordon Ryan every day, who just train with Marcelo Garcia and Mateus Deniz every day and have never competed and are maybe in their 40s, in their 50s, you know, or younger. And are just absolute beasts.
They
you
scare
know?
Me more.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know what they've got, but they're hanging in there. I'm like, oh, God, this guy is terrifying.
For real. And you go there, and you see Mateus getting roles with these guys and you know, Nick Rodriguez and Gordon getting roles with these 40-year-old, you know, guys who are just mat rats as well, but nobody knows who they are.
They just don't compete and stuff.
Yeah, and but there are so many just savages on those mats that you would never know, you know? It's like, I know sometimes, especially when I went to Henzo's, you know, you go to Henzo's and it's intimidating. There's all these great guys on the mats, you know? And then some stranger, a guy you never know before, he's got gray hair, he comes up to you and says, hey, want to roll? And I'm like, yes, I would love an easy round, you know? And then he comes up and he just spanks me, just kills me, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. He's like, yeah, you know, I've been training here at Henzo's for 20 years, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me, I've only visited there one time actually, but was just, it felt like everyone sort of had the same system in place. They were really going with, you know, John's hierarchy, and mm-hmm. he's got a very specific way of attacking no-gi jiu-jitsu, and, you know, the drills they are running. It really was a team learning, like, the preferred sequence of the master. It was really interesting because I feel like a lot of places it's a little more open, you know, especially in the pro format where guys drill what they want to work on. And, man, I watched everyone, Gordon Ryan, you know, Craig Jones. They're all doing the drills.
It's the,
and working
the meta game, right?
Sure.
I think that's the kind of the buzzword that everybody's using nowadays. I don't know. Am I understanding it right? Because I think what you're saying is like you go to some gyms and one guy's like, he's like, you know, the really good guard passer. And then this guy, or he's the flexible Baron Bolo dude. And then there's the leg lock guy over there. But it's like at Danaher's, I've noticed that, I mean, they all have their preferred strengths and areas and stuff, but they all have every sort of area dialed in, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I mean, they've made that choice, though, to go to Danaher to learn from him. You know, I think there are only a few that have really come up through Danaher from White Belt or whatever, through Henzo and that network. But a lot have come in as experienced athletes. So that's what they're going there for. They're going there to conform to that system where, you know, maybe other people just come up in the gym that they're at and they develop their own style organically like that.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Good point. I mean, I would even say the same thing is true for certain gyms like Henzo's, for example. Like Marcelo's, for example. Because, you know, Marcelo has his curriculum and he has a very, very distinct style. You know, the whole arm drag, stake in the back, X guard, single leg X. And everybody in the gym kind of does that, you know. They all have their areas they're a little bit better known for. Mateus is a beast guard passer, you know. Gianni's the flexible Baron Bolo guy. So they all have their own, like, specialities, but they're all well-versed in all those areas as well, right? So it's very much, it is a top-down thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is also, like, the way that Danaher runs the class is so unique. You know, he's lecturing almost like a college professor, and it's so detail driven and organized, and man, I was just blown away. Like the level of detail is like unlike a lot of things I've seen before. But you can probably speak to that a bit more as you've seen him over the years. Now you've been visiting the basement for.
You know, it's funny though that Danaher doesn't consider himself to be a good teacher. I heard this in the past. I mean, he is an incredible
communicator.
He is an incredible teacher, but he doesn't consider himself a good teacher because he knows that his style of teaching is not accessible to everybody. And it's that thing. You go into the room, there's like 60 people, and everybody is deathly silent because everybody's trying their hardest to hear what John is saying. Because he doesn't even change the speaking volume of his voice when he's demonstrating the technique. He doesn't project to the room. He doesn't, you know, field Q&A. It's very much a, this is what I'm showing. This is the move. Go and practice. And he has then these small groups where he works with, you know, the elite guys, the squad, you know, off to one side, where he really gets in and refines and corrects. And there's a lot of one-to-one style stuff there, or small group coaching. But not everybody gets a taste of that. So he himself has actually kind of come out there and said that, I'm not a great teacher. He is a good teacher. He's an incredible teacher. But by traditional standards, he doesn't teach to the room. He teaches to the smartest person in the room, and everybody else has to try and keep up. Interesting.
I think it's so impressive when I go to Henzo's and Marcelo's as well, Marcelo Garcia as well. But just the amount of knowledge that John has, it's always like surprising to me, because he's just so sure of himself. Every time I go in there, he goes in and he teaches a new technique. And these aren't simple techniques that he's usually teaching. You know, these are techniques that are 5-6 steps, you know, and they go from the, you know, sweep to pass to submission. You know, they're long chains sometimes. But he's always so dialed in, you know, and it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Right? Yeah. Like, again, like I said. And he knows exactly, you know, what you know, I obviously he knows exactly what he's teaching, but he's just so sure of himself. And then, like you said, and then after the training, he'll be like, Nikki, I saw that you did this, you should have done this, you know, and he'll be able to give him like very tangible, actionable advice in that moment. Like, I just observed you do this technique. And I'm going. These are the things that I'm giving you. And like he always has like these very specific things.
Oh,
that,
like laser sharp.
Laser sharp. It really, he can, the way he can
razor
hone
sharp.
In.
I'm sorry, not laser sharp. What am I saying?
You could say laser. I'm down.
That might be even sharper.
Yeah. But just the way he's able to hone in on these intricacies and details of the techniques is so impressive. And I know that I think that's something that. It impresses me definitely about Marcelo too, and guys like Lucas Lepre, the way they're so detail oriented.
But I mean, it is definitely a those guys are sort of coming at it with a disadvantage because English is not their native language,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And John is just such an incredible communicator, you know. Just there's such a clarity in the way that he speaks. There's no fluff. There's no fumbles. His thought process just so ordered and just incredibly focused and direct. I don't have that ability to speak like that in English a lot of the time. So imagine you're trying to do it in a second language. It's going to be really,
true.
Really tough.
Very, very true.
But, you know, it's not to say that the information that you're getting from those top teachers, like guys like Marcelo or Murillo or any of the other top coaches in New York, is any less, because obviously they all have something really, you know, incredible to offer as well, right? Mm-hmm.
An experiment I'd love to do, I've been soft pitching it around the office, is what could you do with the extended amount of time there? As like an adequate purple belt doesn't know shit about no-gi, really. What could I go in there and learn in 2 months? You know, like, I would love to see it. Because a week, you don't really – you maybe get exposed to some ideas and you have to go back and really workshop it and research on your own. But, you know, if you train every day for 2 months, you might, like, pick up some stuff. But what would you pick up and how much? So – I'm throwing it out there, guys.
What do you mean?
You want to spend two months in New York training?
I do. Gotcha. I would love that. And like to chronicle that experience. I think.
Gotcha.
You know, I'd love to do that with the 10th Planet School, for example. I don't really know the 10th Planet system, and like, how much of the warm-ups could I remember after 2 months? You know, they have that unique system there. And
Derek, who's another guy who works with us here at Flow, but doesn't know anything really about jiu-jitsu, doesn't train. And we were at Marcelo's, and he was like, do you think if I just started coming to Marcelo's every day for like the next 2 years, I could be a world champion? And I was like,
you could be a blue belt.
I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. Maybe a little
just try to get him in the door.
Really. Yeah. Yeah,
come on, give it a go.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you trained in New York? Because, like, you know, we've all visited for various reasons, but Have you even trained? You've never trained in New York, right?
I didn't get to train. Wow. Wait, no.
You train JTs now?
I didn't train JTs. No, I haven't actually trained. I wasn't ready for it. When I said the last trip was an accident, I was planning on going to Moscow for a Grand Slam, and some flight issues came up. So I wasn't really prepared to train.
Yeah, because explain what was happening.
So I was supposed to go over for the Moscow Grand Slam, the AJP Tour thing, and the best financial way to get there was to book two separate itineraries. And what that means is if you miss your connecting flight, well, it's not really a connecting flight. It's a separate flight. So you may as well just not be at the airport. You'd be late. And they weren't going to – what happened was I was delayed coming out of Austin, Texas, going to New York. That's where my connecting flight was, or separate flight. So I get there, and I'm late, and they're not going to rebook me for anything less than $2,000. And I said, yikes. Well,
I guess I'm spending the weekend
in
New York
for the weekend, yeah. Which isn't bad. You know, if you're going to be stuck in a place, New York is a wonderful place to be hanging out. So, when I visited Henzo's.
But you didn't have your stuff with you to train, huh?
Exactly. Ah. Yeah, yeah. So I wasn't really ready to train. And it was like the weekend, and there was a Bellator fight that night, so guys weren't training on a Friday night. But I didn't mind. I hung out in New York for a while because I hadn't really seen the city either. So.
It's never a bad day.
Haven't been able to actually train in New York.
How about you've trained a bunch in New York, right?
I've been very lucky. Gotten to train at Henzo's. Gotten to train at Marcelo's, Unity, Shaolin's.
Oh wow.
I've kind of trained at a lot of them. I've been very very lucky. Yeah, the time I got to train at Henzo's, man, it was incredible. Got to roll with Gordon and Nikki and Ethan. And a bunch of other those older guys who messed me up. Oh, guys, wrote Jake Shields too, who choked me out a bunch. But yeah, one of the more memorable times for sure. Maybe is kind of a good story is the growing at Unity, and I think it's one of your favorite trips that I've ever done.
It is. I felt all that.
Oh man, like just the training at Unity was like their competition class. I think we did like 8 rounds of drilling. It was like 4 rounds of takedowns and then 4 rounds of on the mat technique, just straight 8 rounds of drilling straight through. And then I think after that, then it was just 8 rounds of rolling. I think the rounds were 8 minutes. Mm. And so
that's a lot of mat time.
Yeah, yeah. So I was dead. I was dead. And
there's some wonderful just framing of your face and like the terror and exhaustion and just.
I think this is good. We've talked about this before. Rolling at other gyms, training at other gyms, and why it's so important is because like man, sometimes you can get comfortable at your gym, right? And you go to these other gyms where you don't know the people you're rolling with. They don't know you. They don't know your game. You don't know their game. You know the roles are a little bit more intense, you know.
A little cagey too. You're trying to be a little careful, but also like not the weak. You don't want to seem weak either.
You don't want to give anything up, and you know, but you don't want to go be the guy who's going too hard. it's just a delicate balance for sure. And then to be able to train with high level guys as well.
Did the guys come after you?
I mean, no, probably not at all. They probably went easy on me, but I.
Felt like it.
I felt like it. Because, like, you know, afterwards, you know, it's a new class. You don't know the class structure. I know the class structure at my gym. So I know how much I can push and, like, still be able to.
You know
to,
when you can rest and
coast.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know how you can pace yourself.
You can pace yourself at your own gym. But when you go to a different gym, you don't know how the class is structured. You don't know how to pace yourself.
Sometimes there's no clock on the wall.
And sometimes, you know, especially these bigger gyms, it's kind of, you know, at the whim of the head coach.
Fun. Johnny Tama, a great athlete, is visiting instructor right now at our academy. And he's really changed things up because he's, you know, he's a guest instructor. He's running the show. And
he has a totally different way of
you know,
things, yeah.
there has been a lot less resting, for example, and there's been more hard drilling, and you know, it's catching some people off guard because not everyone gets to travel. You know, we're really lucky; we get to travel all the time, and usually that involves some kind of training. But some of the guys in our gym don't really get out, and so for them to have their system shock like that, like, oh my god, this is so much harder. Yeah. So it really is like a change of pace and a new challenge. I love it. I think it's a great way to sort of get out of a rut you might be in your training, is just to roll with somebody else or go to another class, and
it lets you know those bullshit techniques that you try on the whites and blue belts in your gym, and then you take them to another gym they don't work.
It's always disheartening as well when you're like, okay, I gotta go my A game here because it's the only way I could survive, and that doesn't work. It's like, damn it.
Okay, I guess my B game. What's my B game again?
All right, I wanna ask you then. In all the gyms, top three toughest roles that you had, in all of the gyms that you're training at in New York.
For me?
Not three guys from each gym, but just
just top three, yeah.
Man, I mean that every round at Unity probably.
Like, no, pick one. Come on.
What do you mean, like pick like a specific person?
People. Yeah.
I mean, I always tell people that I just like I felt like I needed to go really hard when I was rolling with Paulo because
Paulo Meow,
yeah, and because he just effortlessly was like, you know, passing my guard and submitting me, and I felt like he was bored, you know, and I was like trying to give him something. And he would just like take my back easily, and I just like
sigh midway through, like,
yeah. And then I puke a lot sometimes. I have done that. I do that quite a bit. So I did that, yes. And then
I just love the revelation midway through the show that I puke a lot.
I actually didn't know that. I've seen it like once, but you must be a secret puker.
I try not to advertise it in the middle of the mat space.
Guys, everybody.
I try to run to the bathroom, but I don't know. Yeah, sometimes it happens. I've got some good stories.
I thought you were taking a combat dump.
So what is that? What is the
Well, I was just going to say that. I like ran to the Unity bathroom, and I was like, I thought I was going to puke and everything like that. And then I ran out back out, and then Murillo called me over. I was like, oh, my God, just don't die right now in this moment, Reed. You know?
What did he say to you? This is legendary.
I think he saw that, like, I was probably, like, pale white, and I was, like, dying. And he was like, don't worry. He's like, you're gonna be all right. And I was like, okay. I was like, I'm gonna try to give you everything I have, Murillo, you know. And he was like, don't worry, you know, if you need to go out, just go in the back, puke, grab a drink of water, and just come back. We'll keep rolling. Don't worry. Like, really, didn't give me any outs or excuses. You know, it was just like, yeah,
you're still training.
Yeah, yeah. If you gotta puke, go for it. Then just come right back, and I'll armbar you. And
don't stay too long, though. Like, come back.
Yeah, yeah. Because like you're my training partner. No, but Murillo.
What about the arm?
Yeah, Murillo was super nice. Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what he had on his arm, but his arm was out of commission, and it was like wrapped up in garbage bags, and he still,
he told you to go 100%, right?
Yeah. Then he told me don't worry about it. You know, he was like go for it. Come over me. He's like, you know, don't hold back at all. And I was like,
but he's basically rolling with one arm wrapped in a black trash bag, and not using that arm.
Not using that arm at all. But he told me that I could attack it. He told me that don't worry. Like he was letting me know that to like. There's, you know, no excuses here. You gotta. I was like down with it, but
Marilla's always the guy to invite people at the roll, right? Like I remember we've been there when we were there for Road to Worlds. Like, put the pants on, like let's go. I have a gi for you. Yeah. And,
amazing role, yeah, though. Amazing, yeah. Amazing role, and just like to feel somebody like that. You know, feel those guys. You really feel what it's like to roll with these high level guys.
How gangster is it though that he's like got one arm and he basically tells you.
100%. What about you though? You've been
come at me 100%.
You've been to New York a bunch of times. You got in a role.
Yeah, no, never with any names. Like I have trained at a couple of the gyms. I trained at Henzo's.
You did a private lesson with John though, right?
I did. I've done a couple of privates in New York. I got a role at Marcello's way back because the first time I ever visited New York was in 2010. That was like a long time ago, and I think I was a new purple belt or you know been a purple belt for a little while. And I basically went to New York to train for a week. And I went to Marcello's like twice a day, every day for like 5 days. Nice. It was freaking incredible. But that was like way back. And he didn't have any of the names that he has there now. You know, Mateus, you know, Marcus Holder. None of those guys were there. This is way, 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 way back. But the last times that I've trained in New York, it's just worked out that I've trained at Henzo's. And I did John's class, but I didn't train with any I didn't roll with Gary or Gordon or those guys. You know, I was rolling with the old dudes over in the corner who also were really, really, really tough. Like you're saying, it's like
they actually were tough.
Yeah, and a couple of them were kind of coming over to me as well, and it's like we just go next, and I was like, oh god, you know, anytime it's that thing, isn't it? A visitor
look
comes
in their
over,
eye. Yes,
yeah, they're like fresh meat. But I only rolled gi at Henzo's as well. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, I was really lucky because I got to do a couple of private lessons. And I did one private lesson with John Danaher. And I did a private lesson with Paul Schreiner. And Paul is...
At Marcello's too. Yeah, he's there.
Man, so this is the crazy thing. I don't think a lot of people really appreciate who Paul is. Mm. and how freaking good he is either, because Paul is like a little bit of
Oh, I got to roll with Paul, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah, I did get to roll with Paul. Not this time, but the last time. Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So tough. But it's like, just to explain who he is, because I think a lot of people are like not even familiar with his name, because he's very, very low-key guy. He's basically number two to Marcelo in the gym, right? He teaches like every day, and it's crazy because he's not even a black belt from Marcelo. He's like a... God, I can't even remember who he got his black belt off. But Paul is like an old school American jiu-jitsu guy. He's from San Jose. No, sorry, he's from Santa Cruz.
Isn't he a Claudia Franca black belt, maybe?
I think so, yeah. He's from Santa Cruz, California. He spent a bunch of time living in Brazil, training with so many different people. He trained with the Gracie Barra guys and Gordo and all those dudes. He trained with Alliance and Fabio Gurgel. He trained with all these different people, just constantly bouncing around. And got his black belt years and years. Probably like a third or fourth degree black belt now, I guess, but really high up there. And I just think it's amazing because, you know, he was basically hired and became like the number two instructor at Marcelo's gym. That's an incredible responsibility, right? You know, an incredible trust from Marcelo to bring somebody in and to do that. But I think speaks volumes as to just how good Paul is, right? And he is freaking incredible instructor. Really, really good. And he has a killer half guard game. So like, all right, that's what we did in that particular lesson, because I was like, Paul, I know you're really good at a lot of stuff, but I know you got a killer like old school half guard game, but you got some really nice tricks. And we looked at some really nice details. And man, one of my favorite things about the private with Paul is that, you know, I've done classes with him and he's a great instructor, but he's teaching to the room. But when you're one-on-one, he's like teaching me this kind of like, you know, this counter to this little defense and this, that, and the other. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I know this works because it's the only thing that works on Lucas Lepre when he's passing my guard. It's the only thing that works.
And
I'm like, okay, that's money. Yeah. Battle tested, right?
Yeah, Paul gave me some, we rolled and he submitted me 40 times with this north-south choke. So I asked him afterwards about this north-south choke. He gave me some really good details about finishing that choke. All those guys love that choke. Are really good at it.
It's one of the things in Marcelo's that everybody does really well. But man, I don't know what it is. I just don't know what I'm missing. I cannot get that freaking
I've never
choke
figured
it's
it out
It's difficult
either.
To yeah, yeah. choke to finish. It is yeah,
right?
It is. But but they seem to have really a lot of success finishing it. I do also need a full lesson from Paul or one of those
just
guys.
Just like a 1 hour focus session on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I remember you were saying that maybe as Matthias Lutz said, he liked the choke because of the control. You know, it's really hard to just get out of that position even if you can't finish.
What was it he said that there's no defense?
This is what Paul was saying, telling me.
Oh,
actually,
Paul,
this
okay,
is
yeah.
yeah. This is okay. what Paul was saying to me, or Paul or Marcelo, I forget. But yeah, they were saying that they think it's like a more dangerous choke or a more powerful choke than the rear naked choke because like, you know, there's clear ways to defend the rear naked choke or rear naked strangle, I'm sorry. Excuse me. And
you've been to Headshots recently. Yeah.
But there's no real easy way or there's no real avenue to defend the north south choke, so they like it. It's even better.
It's yeah. true, because, you know, think about it. I've know this has happened to me, and I've even got out sometimes like this, but like a fully locked on rear naked choke. Some just tough guys or a guy with like no neck, they just you reach up, just grab your hands, and they just peel it off, and they just get out.
You see it all the time in MMA, like those guys just like grit it out,
got the glove grip and stuff.
Yeah.
And they have that guy's like a full rear naked choke in, but
just doesn't tap.
Yeah,
yeah. And you'd think it's game
over
at
that
point, right? But that's why, you know, I guess when they teach the rear naked, obviously you want to kind of like punch the hand, you know, at the back of the neck rather than do that whole kind of like hand on top of the head because guys just peel it off. But there is no peeling off anything in the north-south choke.
Mm.
Like, there's no rolling. You roll one way, you go into like a freaking guillotine, you know, if you can roll at all because the guy is basically sprawled out on top of you.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. There's no way you're going to bench press the guy off. It's just, man, I get caught in north-south. I'm done.
You get somebody who's really good at it. It's hard, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've been trying it a lot, and I haven't been able to finish, but I'm there, and I'm you know, getting frustrated because I can't finish, but I'm also in control. So it's worthwhile to experiment with because at least, you know, you're not getting smashed.
It's yeah. a side-control submission, basically, right? Or
yeah.
I mean, north-south submission, but it's a submission you can get off. You don't have to
right.
mount the guy or take yeah. his back, you know, so.
because mount's not really that safe these days, I feel like, and especially in
Nogi. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, interesting. But yeah, training experiences in New York for me, like, one thing I did really enjoy was training at Henzo's, because John, this is so funny, but John teaches, he starts every class teaching us some kind of takedown or stand-up stuff, right? And we did that. And then, like, he usually does, like, one to two or a couple of, you know, couple of things from the feet, and then you go down onto the ground. And that day, he was showing De La Riva Guard. And I was like, oh, it's familiar. You know, I mean, trained with De La Riva for like years. You know, I just flew up to New York to do the private lesson with John. Flew 5,000 miles or whatever it is. And, you know, in the class today, he happens to be teaching De La Riva. So that was kind of funny as well, because I love seeing... De La Riva is one of those positions where there are so many kind of schools of thought on the De La Riva guard, and everybody's got their own take on it. And then a lot of it is down to things like, you know, body type and style and preferred options for Martin stuff. It's like, you know, you look at the Mendez brothers, right? Their De La Riva guard is really, really Baron Bolo focused. You look at guys like all the guys from Merigali's gym, they do that De La X, right? So they punch that far hook through, and then the free leg that comes through, and it kind of hooks the guard in like the far leg in like an X guard position, and then they've got an entire series of attacks that they do for both sides off that. And then, you know, it's just there's just tons and tons of different options. So it was kind of nice to see that. But my private with John was really cool, because he asked me what I wanted to do. And, you know, I'd been thinking about it for a while. It's like, I have an hour with John Danaher. What do I want to learn? So I went in there with one question. I was like, IBJJF legal straight ankle lock. Okay. I want to know how to make the leg lock feel the difference between, ow, that hurts, I need to tap, or shit, it literally feels like the foot is being ripped off the bottom of my leg.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you felt some guys and they kind of just like get the ankle lock and it's like, and they smash the blade of the forearm into the Achilles and it's like, oh man, that really hurts. But you grit your teeth, and then they get a certain point, it's like, I can't hold it anymore. It's like Game of Mercy. It's like, ah, damn it, tap. But then there are some guys, they wrap up that ankle lock and literally you feel like it's going to dislocate from your lower leg. It's like, it's just the mechanics of it are different. So I was like, John, I want to know how to break a man's leg.
Yeah. You know, what a nice thought. Yeah.
Best thing is like, you know, I was sat there and John was, I think he was still having, like during that period when he was getting his surgery and his hip replacement and stuff, it was around that time. But he had Matthew Tesla was the kind of the demo partner working with me on it and stuff. Matthew, I don't think, you know, many people know, but he's a brown belt? Brown, black belt, I'm not sure. But he's could be black now, yeah. But he's one of those, again, dark horses from the gym. Like a John would call him probably like a junior member of the squad, you know. But he competes in a lot of events, but not quite as well known as the rest of them. But they were both sat there, intently sort of staring at me as I walk over the mat and I sit down in front of them. And John's like, so what would you like to do today? And they're both like drilling me like that. And I was like, I told him like ankle lock, and there was just like zero hesitation. There wasn't even like a moment.
Let me think.
No, nothing. There wasn't even a moment of, well, okay, I guess we could do it. It was just like the words right out of my mouth. Exactly. The words were almost like halfway out of my mouth, and he's like, good, now. And just like bring me into the position. And oh my God, you know, there are stories as well about John that he is not a very... what is the word I'm looking for? But he's pretty merciless when it comes to showing techniques, to demonstrating techniques. It's like if you're John's uki, right? If you're his demonstrating partner, you know, the body for the techniques, it's like be prepared because the technique is going to be applied correctly. There's no like dialing it down and kind of like letting the guy kind of like be comfortable while you're explaining. It's like, he shows the technique with anatomical precision, and therefore it's like if you do not, you know, you it's going to be held like half a millimeter away from breaking point. It's like, oh my God, it is miserable. It is absolutely miserable. Like my feet hurt after that, and he was being gentle, But just the technique was so correct when he was showing me the I'm practically limped out of there, and we didn't even roll. It was just like just feeling the technique kind of like demonstrated.
I did get a great interview with John as well when I was in New York.
Yeah,
we talked to all things ADCC, so that's to come as well. But it reminds me of Mikey Musumeci, right? He's got a great straight ankle lock there, and I think that's. I always try to like tell people when I'm telling people about Mikey, and I'm like, he made this guy tap out in 12, another adult black belt in jiu-jitsu tap out in 12 seconds and like from an ankle lock
and the world championship final.
In the world championship final, like this guy tapped out in 12 seconds. He made another adult black belt have in 12 seconds. I like try to like not because his ankle hurt. It was like he didn't make him tap out because his ankle hurt. He made him tap out because in 12 seconds his leg in 13 seconds his leg was going to break.
Yeah,
like, that's why he tapped out.
Destroyed it.
Yeah, because like he felt like his leg was going to break. That's a different type of pressure than tapping because it hurts your ankle or hurts your calf or whatever.
Yeah, literally scary. And it's not the first time Mikey's done those super fast ankle lock submissions. I think it was PANS 2017. It's the year that he did Rooster.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and he tapped the guy out, and it was the fastest submission of PANS, I believe. I think it was something like 20 seconds or something. And savage, absolute savage. I remember that Chase and I trained with Kyle Terror in Rio one time, and.
Oh, I felt that too.
Right. Kyle's a lot like John in the gi. I feel like Kyle's very precise,
absolutely,
and
surgically precise.
I've never spent more time considering a single position than I have with Kyle, especially in our private. We worked on like Z guard for an hour and a half or whatever that was.
Yeah, it was literally
Z guard kind of variation,
and he won't accept anything less than like 100% perfect.
But what's amazing is that you feel it. So when he does it to you, you're like, yeah, that works. That works really, really well because this is killing me just to be in your guard. There was so much pressure on my like thigh right above the knee.
It's the hip clamp thing,
right?
Yeah,
the hip clamp.
Man, I've literally like I've trained with other people since. I've rolled with other people who do the hip clamp, and nothing even came close to the pressure I felt. I literally felt like my hip was going to pop out.
Wow. Like, it hurt. It hurt to be in his guard.
Yeah.
And it was really no way to get out of it either. I mean, it was a clamp. And
yeah,
so,
half guard.
It was a half guard. And the reason why Hal brought it up, I believe, or Kyle might have mentioned it, was he managed to hold off like DJ Jackson in an absolute match, no-gi, using this hip clamp technique
for like 10 minutes. Yeah.
And DJ is a bull. I mean, you watch that guy try and pass, and he's bigger than Kyle. He's strong and relentless. And Kyle kept him there. And it's like, okay, there's clearly, something there that's going well for him. And, a lot like John, just step by step, inch by inch adjustments. And I've forgotten it all. So,
What about you? You got any good roles in there? Good
New York guys. Let's talk
guys. Or anybody, but, just in the gym?
Plenty of good roles throughout my career here at Flo. But for New York, I rolled with Levi Jones-Leary in Abu Dhabi, and
that's right. Yeah. You managed to get in on a little kind of unity training session.
Yeah,
right?
there's a small training in Abu Dhabi is kind of weird, by the way. Like there aren't that many jiu-jitsu gyms because it's an official state sponsored sport. There's like a full facility to train at the arena, and that's where a lot of training happens in classes. But there's a small little gym like 15 minutes away. That's open to the public, and a lot of the guys from Unity have managed to form a relationship there, and they train. So the Meows train there, and basically anybody that wants to go with them.
Who was there that day then when you
so
went
we had
there?
Taliesin and Paulo. No. So that's a separate session. I've been there more than once, but this session it was Taliesin and Levi.
So you got the hookup.
they want the hookup too, right? They want some flow coverage, and I want to train. So we're happy to make that trade, and yes, I roll with Levi. And like your experience with Paulo, he was just bored. And what's crazy is I don't really think of him as being that much bigger than me. He's bigger, but
he is a big kid.
But not that much when I look at him. But holy crap, I had no strength. And he was so positionally sound. He was doing these like bullshit positions that I was mad that worked, where he had like his legs were scissored across my chest. And somehow I wasn't able to like push him down. It was kind of like half donkey guard, if you will. I don't know. He was just doing whatever he wanted. It was insane.
I have heard that he's really, really strong.
His grips were incredible.
Said that he was strong actually was Gianni Grippo.
Keenan
Said
right?
Keenan said Levi's strong?
Or he said that he just felt different. right?
In the interview, I did listen.
Yeah, he said he picked Levi
to win gold.
Levi just felt different.
Right. But no, I remember it was Europeans because Levi beat Kevin Mahecha, Gianni Grippo, Pedro Romaglio, and then, of course, Lucas Lepre. And I was chatting to, because Gianni went up to lightweight for Euros, and I was chatting to him afterwards. And Gianni was like, man, I'm going back down to featherweight because those lightweights feel strong. Mm. He specifically was talking about Levi. And we were talking about this the other day, right? That, damn, the one thing about Levi that really like stands out is that kid has got some paws on him.
Mitts.
Holy big crap. Yeah. His hands. Next time you meet Levi, just kind of take a look, because you'll be like, Jesus, his hands look like the size of a guy who's 200 pounds, but he's walking at like probably 170. Like, it's, he just like disproportionately big, thick freaking claws on his hands. It was crazy.
In that same session, I got the trainer Towson as well. Towson was also there, and that was super fun. You know, Towson was really nice to me and really creative. You know,
he didn't tune you up.
I mean, he finished me a million times, but they were just, you know, smooth, clean, awesome technique. And
there's a lot of Baron Bolos?
A lot of Baron Bolos, but just like an impassable guard. I mean, when you...
Many people have tried. I don't think anybody's done it yet.
So. It's just fun to feel someone that's good at. I feel like it's a recurring theme whenever we talk about this and training for elite guys, is when you run into someone that's so good at what they do, it's just kind of a pleasure to like feel it.
Your scope of jiu-jitsu broadens when like you realize how deep this rabbit hole of jiu-jitsu really goes, you know? And like that is always a refreshing thing coming back from New York. I am like always just, my faith in jiu-jitsu is always just restored, because it's just like hearing people talk about it and seeing people approach it from such different angles and feeling people be so good at it. Like just the scope of jiu-jitsu, it's endless. It's huge, and it's so reassuring.
Hey, question about Roland with Allison. Actually, did he play his guard passing game at all?
You know, he did actually, and I was amazed at his pressure passing. Yeah. Like all those guys from Unity via Murillo, so, of
via
course.
Murillo, yeah, of course, yeah.
Didn't work though, right?
Definitely was incredible, and that's a huge area of weakness for me. I have terrible pressure. You know, I'm a light guy, and I've used that as my excuse not to really learn how to pressure people, because it's easier for a bigger guy to push me away. I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. So I play a very rangy, distance-based game. But really, you know, I should be learning the pressure passing, and it was a real pleasure to feel Taliesin do it to me, because he's much smaller than me.
Well, all those guys are on the smaller scale, right? I mean, you look at everybody from Unity. Misa is, you know, obviously a Rooster 8 girl. Taliesin, Rooster 8. All the guys, especially the new crew, just got their black belts. Jonas Andrade.
Jones, yeah, Diego.
Diego Pato. You got both the meows. Italo Mura is a little bit heavy, right? He's kind of like lightweight.
Yeah. Junie's in there, brown belt.
Junie's in there, brown belt. Yeah, was he like light feather?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, all these guys, they're you know, sub 150, the majority of them, and yet they pass like freaking heavyweights. Right?
Yeah, and they just suck it in, and it hurts your ribs, and you want to give up the pass. Well. Like, it's miserable, and you feel there's no escape. Once they lock down that grip, that body lock pass, and you're just like, oh, okay.
Remember we did the... Oh, man, it was last year, actually. It was last August. It was August 2018, because it was at Masters Worlds. Remember that you and I, we connected with Joao Miao, and yes. we went out to Robert Drysdale's gym, the Zenith, and Robert very kindly let us use his gym to shoot some techniques with Joao. And those techniques are on the site. You can check them out, because, you know, like, I've known the Miao brothers a long time, right? Since they were purple belts. Great kids. But it's no secret that they're not the... You know, best conversationalists, you know, they're always very, very polite. They're always very, very respectful and you know, friendly in their own way, but it's difficult to get them opened up. But my word, I've never seen Joao as enthusiastic and as into what we were doing that day, because we went in there and he was like, well, what do you want me to show, you know, what techniques, because we hadn't discussed it, we just, you know, made the arrangement to be there. And I was like, see some of the passing game, shall we? Mm. And his face just lit up, right? Remember how he was, how excited he was, like, to show this technique? And I was like, man, can you slow down? Because, like, I'm trying to film this, and it's really good. But he's just like, yeah, you do this. And it's like, and then you can do... Oh, man, that was such good information, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with a lot of guys. They're a little bit uncomfortable on camera, or maybe just shy in general. Get them talking about jiu-jitsu, and all of a sudden, that's their world. Yep. They know so much, and they're so happy to share. Almost, I've never had anyone hold back something from me, you know, on or off camera. You know, people are just so willing to to really show what they're good at. I feel like it's such a joy for them. So it's nice. I mean, it's a privilege to be in our position where we get to see that all the time.
That's something that we've all got in common and we're all really passionate about, right? Mm-hmm. But speaking of the Taliesin thing as well, we should definitely mention to everybody that the fifth and final part of our Taliesin Suarez documentary series, The Path to Black Belt, dropped today. So that concludes. Nice. I mean, that was just incredible. Our contributor, Michael Sears, who will be joining us full-time soon, man, he shot that from January through till, you know, June at Worlds. I think he shot it across four different continents over the space of 6 months. Filmed in Brazil, filmed in Europe, filmed in Abu Dhabi, filmed in the States, and shows like that latter period of Taliesin winning gold medal, every tournament he enters at brown belt and then getting his black belt on the podium. Not on the podium, getting his black belt after winning the world championships. Mm-hmm. Incredible story, right?
Absolutely. Taliesin's going to be a force at black belt once
for years to come, right? Yeah, he's 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
Man, I'm hoping that Mikey Musumeci Taliesin match happens somewhere.
That's
the match I want to see.
Yeah.
You know the thing about Taliesin as well, I've really sort of soaked up from watching those episodes, is that for a young guy, he's got such a good head on his shoulders. Mm. So, like, mature and grounded and, like, wise beyond his... I think back to when I was that age, I was a freaking idiot when I was, like, 19 or 20 years old. You know? I had no clue what life was about.
Some things never change, you know?
Still figuring it out. There we go. But, I mean, I don't know, man. Taliesin, he's just... He's a special kid, right?
Absolutely. I love watching him.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work with him, you know, and he's fun to train with too. So, yeah, good times.
Hey, just checking the comments on the live stream, actually, and there's a good one here about Jordan Butler. Just reminded me that remember Bird Wiltsy? For those who don't know, Andrew Wiltsy's he's from Pedigo Submission Fighting, and they're in Mount Vernon, Illinois, the American Jiu-Jitsu crew. And Bird Wiltsy is his younger brother, and he hit a 7-second ankle lock last year at Worlds.
I remember that.
He's like literally the referee said go, and he like sprinted out into the middle of the mat, double guard pull, bang. It was just so cool.
There's nothing more horrifying than a guy that's like running at you and wants an ankle lock and gets there in a few seconds. You're like, oh no, this is really bad for me.
Yeah, man.
Doesn't go well.
Cool. What else is up?
Well, I mean, let's see. I just keep going back to ADCC. I mean, Kasai's coming ADCC. Up. So one of the things that Josh and I were talking about in that interview was his match with Mateus Denise. I'm looking forward to again.
Rematch.
Both those guys at ADCC.
Because they fought
twice.
Semifinal at Noki Worlds last year as well, right?
And 2016.
That's right.
Both the semifinals.
And Josh has wins over him
both times.
Twice.
And he actually, I got his prediction for the match. And he was pretty candid about how he thought it would go, where... the winner's the guy on top. He says, you know, when last year's match, if you haven't seen it yet, from Nogi Worlds in 2018, was super back and forth. It was like 6-4
It was like the first half was all Josh.
Yes,
and the second half was all Mateus.
Exactly. And he basically said it's because, you know, he managed to get swept, and so Mateus came on top and was just racking up the points, and Josh had to kind of hang on at the last point. So he's thinking for Kasai, he's just got to be on top. You know, and
slightly different rule structure as well in Kasai, right? It's you know, they use kind of the standard scoring points for the jiu-jitsu positions, but they have that 1 point thing, whereas they don't have advantages in Kasai, right? So
submission attempts and near takedowns.
Yeah, they both get.
I forget about the near takedowns thing occasionally until it happens in the match, because that could be a huge deal, especially in Josh and Mateus's match, because you know they're going to wrestle, and Mateus has got excellent wrestling, and so does Josh. So
remember, Mateus beat Craig Jones in overtime third coach grappling just a couple of months ago, right? With that takedown right at the end there, that was cool. Yeah, man, I'm excited for Kasai Pro 6.
I talked to Mateus, and he thought he was going to win.
That he predicted a heel hook finish.
predicted he was going to be on top and win.
That's a great match. I'm really excited.
Oh, that's an awesome match.
I mean, you got, obviously, Josh's... both of them are going to ADCC as well. That's a significant super fight that could kind of predict a little bit about what to expect at ADCC. And then Kasai Pro 6 has actually got another great super fight on there as well. It's got a bunch, but... Kynan versus Yuri.
Yes, absolutely.
That's really interesting. Because
Yuri's been ramping up the training, man. On Instagram, he has been posting a lot of training stuff. I like it.
So I like the fact that this is another match that predicts you.
And both
ADCC.
Those guys, yeah, in the same division.
Yeah,
ADCC.
Over 99. Yeah. And you know, I was doing some research for this the other day when I was writing about a potential match between Yuri Samoys and Kyle Snyder, because the Yuri suggested it and it kind of blew up a little bit there recently, right?
That's
about fun. Everybody was kind of like, one of two camps. They were either like, ah, terrible idea. What was Yuri thinking about taking on Kyle Snyder? And then some other people were kind of like, wow, that's actually really interesting. What would happen? Let's see it. You know, what if? But Yuri, in 2015, he won ADCC at 88 kilos. In 2017, he won it at 99 kilos. And he's coming back this year to do the over 99. And by my kind of research, he could become the only three-time ADCC champion in three different weight divisions.
Very cool,
cool, right?
Nice. Yeah.
That's putting your name in the history
books. Is he really the only guy to win two different weight classes?
No.
Okay. I thought I saw that somewhere. So it would be three different weight classes. Gotcha. Okay.
Wild.
You know what? I pulled out this stat. I've been doing a lot of ADCC stuff. You guys probably think this is interesting. I don't know. I got to look up. I forget who won the absolute ADCC absolute division in 2011. Do you remember who that was? Anybody?
2011. Was 2011 was in UK. No, it was Galvao.
That's to say, it's Andre's first one.
Because that's when he qualified to go fight Braulio.
Did he double goal?
Yes.
And that time
in 2011, it was UK. He beat Palhares in the final of the weight division. I forget who his opponent was in the absolute, but then he went and he fought Braulio in 2013.
Gotcha. This kind of messes up. That kind of messes up my statistic. But I was thinking of like all these guys who win the absolute division, right? It's like 2017, Felipe Pena wins the absolute division, loses in his weight class. 2015, Claudio Calasanz loses in his weight class, wins the absolute division.
Yeah.
2013, who is
Cyborg.
It? Cyborg loses in his weight class.
And wins the absolute.
And wins the absolute.
Oh, my God.
Robert Drysdale in 2005?
Yeah.
Robert Drysdale, something like that. 2005?
Seven.
2007, sorry. 2007, loses in his weight class, wins the absolute.
Wow.
It's like, if you want to win the absolute, I feel like you gotta lose your weight class. Like,
you know, I'm not sure, I'm not certain, but there is a potential explanation for that could be, if you lose in your weight class, you get a bigger rest. Because if you win gold in your weight class, there's a potential you could have a 40-minute match in the weight class final.
Well, like Felipe had a 40-minute match in his weight class final.
True, he took silver and gold, right? But I'm just saying that it could be if you went out a little bit earlier, like in a semi or something. So
Yeah.
But hey, you know, guys, actually, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but we have a very special ADCC legend in our comments right now.
Oh, no, I haven't seen him.
Shanji Hibeiro. What's up, Shanji?
Nice.
Checking in, watching. And,
I wonder where in the globe he is right now.
Right.
He's actually, I believe, Shanji, you'll probably confirm, but I believe he's in Brazil recovering from his wrist surgery.
Oh, that's right.
So this is the first ADCC in a while where Shanji is unable to compete, and it's a shame because for those who don't know, Shanji actually has the record as the competitor with the most number of ADCC matches.
Mm. Wasn't it? It's like 36
or 35 or something. It's like it's over 30.
He's gonna go for 40, right? I remember when he was still ready to compete. That was the thing.
He's gotta have the most arm bars too in ADCC history. I bet he has the most arm bars.
And he's saying ADCC will be great. I do not disagree. I think ADCC is gonna be incredible.
Cannot wait.
We have people in our gym going. I've been hearing little stories from all over the U.S. of people buying tickets, buying flights, going out to watch.
When I went out to Providence, I'm from. Guys were telling me that they're gonna buy tickets and head out all the way out.
It's gonna be such a scene. I love it. I cannot wait.
Yeah, I did see something the other day actually that the tickets are actually selling out pretty fast. So if you haven't got them and you want to go, I would get on that pretty quick. So it's gonna be freaking incredible.
Yep.
A couple of big fight to win super fights coming up as well. We've got major implications.
I'm looking forward to Wagner JT.
Well, right?
Wagner JT, are you kidding?
Wagner JT's this weekend. And
that could be an ADCC
awesome
final
match,
right there.
Right?
Well, look, ADCC gold medalist versus ADCC bronze medalist from 2017. Incredible, but huge, huge deal. This is JT's first no-gi match coming back from ADCC gold.
Wow.
Dang.
He hasn't fought no-gi since.
Wow.
Wagner has had something like 18 matches in the last year and a half, and you know, he's one of the most active no-gi competitors out there, right?
That's a great point. Absolutely.
So that's
incredible for me. You know, like, is that going to be a factor, the inactivity?
Yeah, that must be a thing. JT trying to get some
tune-ups.
Yeah, tune-ups in there. I mean,
it's not tough tune-up.
Yeah, it's a rough tune-up. But just trying to get the experience anyway before ADCC.
And then you got Spriggs versus Tex.
Yes.
Tim Spriggs versus Tex Johnson this weekend on the same card. That's another huge one. I've actually heard that they're going to end up in the same weight class. Because Spriggs won trials, East Coast trials, at under 99, and Tex won over 99. But the rumor is that Tex is going to drop down to under 99. I'm not sure if that's confirmed. I mean, it's very much up in the air. But
there's been some movement just today on that, right?
Yeah.
I read on Mo's Instagram that Dylan is moving up to 99, and we're having the debut of Dante Leon.
Love it. Dante's coming in at 77, right?
Yes.
So now there's
that
two.
Is so good.
There's two Canadians at ADCC.
ADCC.
Him and Ethan.
Ethan, I forget. Taza's Canadian.
Oh yeah, Taza's Canadian.
Yeah, you got a couple. Yeah, but that is really cool, man. I think Dante, you know, this late call up and stuff. It's like he's definitely one of the guys who was on that short list to get a call, because look at what he's done in Nogi this year. You know,
yeah,
so
yeah,
he's
that's
performed
a great addition.
So
it was amazing
well.
Against the best. So he deserves to be there. For
well, he has submissions over Mateusz Lutz, submissions over Edwin Najmi. He had that just explosive match with Renato Canuto at Kasai just recently,
and they're both in 77 at ADCC.
Love it.
We could see that.
And I remember watching him at Noogie Worlds last year, and he was just on fire. And he ran into a tough match with Hugo Marx, but before that, he was just on fire. Noogie seems to be Dante's forte. He's so good at that.
Yeah, and then the what was the other one? It's that's right. The following weekend, so not this weekend, but the following weekend, August 3rd, I want to say, we got Edwin. Is on, I think actually, yeah, this is no, he's already fought in Fight to Win. It's not his Fight to Win debut, but Edwin is coming through, and he's got a match with
DJ Jackson.
DJ Jackson, thank you. There you go. Right, thank you. That's a crazy match.
That is a great match.
Great one.
That's another good one, and again, kind of sets up ADCC because DJ's in 77.
He is, and that's gonna be tough weight for DJ to make. DJ usually fights above that. I feel like
DJ's weight goes up and down a lot, and I remember telling me this once, because he was fighting at some ridiculous like heavyweight, like 200 pounds or something, and I was like, DJ, what are you doing, man? And he's like, I know. And he's like, but it doesn't matter what weight class I sign up for, I still have to cut weight for it.
Yeah, we have a guy who works here now, David, who we work with, who used to, who wrestle, was on the wrestling team with DJ.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We were hearing about
in
that.
In Iowa? Iowa. It was Iowa, right?
Was it? No, I don't think so.
Not Iowa, the Iowa, but he was somewhere in Iowa.
Somewhere in Iowa? I forget. But yeah, he's got some funny stories about DJ. Should ask him.
From the wrestling days?
Yeah.
Should bring him in on the show. You sit him down and say, what's the real deal with DJ Jackson? Oh, here we go. Shanji has commented in.
He's, 41 ADCC matches for Shanji?
Actually, I think he corrected himself and said 42.
What? 42.
42 yeah. Matches in 7 ADCC events.
Wow.
Freaking unreal.
That's nice.
Unreal. Wow, guys. Legend. I'm so excited. Yeah, ADCC is going to be awesome. I love the way that we got these super fights between now and then on Kasai, on Fight to Win. It's just, yeah.
Don't forget about the ADCC after party either. That'll be cool.
I haven't forgotten.
Don't have no idea what you guys are talking about. Well, you guys are at the ADCC tearing it up on the dance floor in Finland.
That's exactly
2 years
what
ago.
Yeah.
Some of us were doing work, sat in the hotel lobby, pounding out stuff.
We're just out there representing.
I can't remember what I was doing that night, to tell you the truth.
Sounds like a good one. Awesome. All right. Well, maybe we'll save that for a future podcast. The stories from the ADCC after party. All right, guys. I think it's a good time to wrap it up. We got stuff to do. I gotta go. I gotta go research some ADCC matches.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, guys, take care. We'll see you again. I think we have another show next week.
Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah, we'll squeeze one in.
Let's do it.
Maybe
awesome.
A special guest even, maybe, hopefully.
Ooh,
we'll see.
Maybe. All right, guys. Peace. See you again for another episode of Fistful of Colors.